under a covenant that you've provided. We ask this all in the name of Jesus. We give you thanks and praise for everything. Amen. We don't know much about Abraham, to be honest. I mean, when we pick up the story of Abraham, he's already a grown man. He's already married. He's already got quite a collection of herd and animals, and he lives in a rather wealthy community of family members. As a matter of fact, we don't know anything about his childhood. So many of the Bible characters that we look into and see their biography, it kind of starts at their birth and how they're raised. But Abraham is the one that we pick up as a fully grown man. We don't know why God chose Abraham for a monumental covenant that would change the course of history. We can only assume that God, knowing all things, certainly knew that Abraham, out of all the men on the earth at that time, Abraham sparked something in God with a relationship or with the faith or whatever it may be that we may never know until we get to heaven ourselves and can reveal these things to us. We may not know what it was about Abraham that drew God to him to make this covenant. We believe, because of his life that he lived, that there was some connection to God, because when God spoke to Abraham and told him that he wanted him to have his wife and servants and animals and leave the well-protected community of his family and go to an area, a land that he's never been, that Abraham believed it. He believed God and followed. So we have to understand or have to believe ourselves that there was some type of a relationship between Abraham and God that we won't know here. We don't understand. We don't know fully. But we know that God felt that he could speak to Abraham and Abraham would follow. And as we go through this lesson, there's several scriptures that we're going to take from the book of Genesis that's dealing with the life of Abraham. But it's all coming down to this covenant that God is making with this man. Because we know from the Garden of Eden until we get to Abraham, God has devised a plan of salvation to save mankind. And he has this plan in fruition. He's trying to utilizes the human element of people to fulfill his plan of salvation. And Abraham is going to play a pivotal role in not only the formation of the people of God, the children of Israel, from which would come the Messiah, God's only son, but Abraham is going to start a covenant with God that's going to carry through the generations, and then when Jesus comes, he's going to also perform a covenant, a new covenant, a new testament with us that we follow. Abraham is beloved by all peoples of most monotheistic religions. You know, if you're a Jew, then you certainly have a love of Abraham as the first Jew, as the father of all Jews. If you're a Christian, you certainly have a respect and admiration of Abraham because of his faith, because of his example of faith, trusting and obeying God and entering into a covenant with God even without knowing what the end results might be. We learn from Abraham and we appreciate him. If you're a Muslim, you have an affection for Abraham because he was the father of Ishmael, which most believe that the Arab nations of the world came from Ishmael. And you believe that he is your father as well. So Abraham is well beloved in most monotheistic religions. But in our lesson today, we believe that the covenant that God is going to make with Abraham is something for us to learn from. So when we get to this, the chapter 12, we pick up where he has asked Abraham, who goes by the name of Abram at the time, he's asked Abram to pack up his things and to leave. Abram has a father named Terah, and he has two other brothers. Abraham being the oldest, his two other brothers have children of their own, but Abram and Sarah do not have children by themselves. And as right before Terah, the father, passes away, one of the brothers named Haran dies, and his son, who goes by the name of Lot, is kind of adopted into the family of Abraham. Abram and Sarah take in Lot, who is their nephew, is the son of Haran who passes away. So he is with them. And so when Terah dies, God tells Abraham to separate from his family and go to a land that he's never been. He's starting in the area of what we know of as today as Iraq, around the city of Baghdad, which was kind of the site of Babylonia and Babylon, and near the Euphrates River, where the Tigris and Euphrates get together. That's where this Abraham's family started out. And as they were traveling, God said, separate and go south into the land of Canaan, or Canaanites there. And he was going to make a promise to Abraham if he would do this. So we pick up in chapter 12 when he makes the first promise in this covenant-making situation with Abraham. God says this. He says in verse 1 to leave and go to a land that I will show you. And then it says, and I will make of thee a great nation. Now this is speaking to a man who's 75 years old, has no children of his own. And I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. Now, these are very great promises made, especially back in ancient days, when your name meant everything and your posterity meant everything, you know, your offspring meant everything. I'm going to make you a great nation. I'm going to bless you, and I'm going to make your name great throughout all the land. And you're going to be a blessing to people. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. Now, what an incredible promise Almighty God is making to Abraham. Not only am I going to bless you, we would be just thrilled and to know that God was going to bless our individual lives. But he is saying that I'm not only going to bless you, I'm going to protect you, because I'm going to bless those that bless you and curse those that curse you. I'm going to protect you, and I'm going to make your name great, and that you will be a blessing to all families on the earth. Abraham had no idea what all this meant. We, of course, thousands of years later, can look back and see how the relationship and the covenant made by Abraham and God is going to lead to the Messiah, eventually 2,000 years later, and because of that, we can be a part of, or at least blessed by, Abraham. That's why when we talk about the Judeo-Christian faith that we're in, there's a connection to the covenant made with Abraham and to the new covenant that Jesus set down for us all. There's a connection there. So he's got all of these great blessings bestowed upon him, but here again, this is about a covenant. A covenant that says, I'm the covenant maker, here's what I'm going to do for you. But I require your loyalty in return. There's nothing you can really do in this covenant in providing the blessings. I'm going to take care of that, but you just have to be loyal and faithful to me. That's what he's asking for Abraham to do, and Abraham's going to do that very thing. So as we go along in chapter 12, we notice that in the lesson text this morning, it jumps into 15, because there's quite a bit that's happened in Abraham's life. And the one thing we have to realize as we go through this lesson is God doesn't speak to Abraham as we read about it every day. There's time periods that lapse between when God speaks verbally to Moses, to Abraham, and makes these covenants and makes these pronouncements, and then there's a time span that passes before he reveals himself to Abraham again. And during that time, we are to assume, I think rightfully so, that Abraham just continues to follow and obey and to grow in his relationship with the Lord. And that's important for us in today's time to understand that God may not reveal himself to us in a powerful way like this every day. Over the course of our lives, we'll be able to look back and say, I remember when God showed me this, or when God spoke to me here. I remember when this manifestation happened. Over the course of your life, it may be a few times that God really poured himself out in a magnificent way, and that's what's happened in Abraham. But during this time, during the interims, he is growing in his faith. He's learning to trust the Lord. He's speaking to him daily, and we're assuming he's praying to him daily and living for him daily. But the times that we see in the scriptures are when he manifests himself to Abraham. And this is the first time. He makes the first statement leave, and because this is what I'm going to do for you. So we get into chapter 15, and God comes back to him. And this was after he had revealed himself to him again and made the same covenant promise. Now that Abram's living in the land of Canaan, he's come down. We've gone from chapter 12 when God told him to go to chapter 15 when he's been there. He's lived there. His herds are grazing and, you know, all this is taking place. And God shows himself to Abraham again and says, I'm going to make you a great nation. I'm going to bless you. He's still without a son. Several years have passed. He started that when he was 75, and he's still several years have passed. And he's making this same covenant, same promises to Abraham as Abraham is getting older. And Abraham in this time, in this manifestation, he asked God a question. You know, Abraham is known for his faithfulness. You know, the New Testament tells us that his faith was found as righteousness in his life. That was how he was righteous, is because of his undying faith to what God told him, and whatever God told him he would do. But he was still human, so he would be like us and ask a question after several years have passed and the promises have not come forth. You know, what God said I'm going to do hasn't started happening yet to our knowledge. So as God reveals himself again and repeats the same thing, prior to verse 9, Abram asked a question. Well, how will I know? This time shows the first time that Abram is saying, I've been here, I've done what you told me to do, and now I'm hearing your word again, but how am I going to know if I'm going to inherit all of this, if my posterity is going to inherit and live throughout the land? How will I know this? He asked the question. So part of the covenant that God wants to reveal and even ingrain greater, God is giving him the promise of the covenant, but now God's going to do something physical with Abram at the time, so that Abram will know that God means business. So God said in verse 9, he said, take me a heifer of 3 years old, a three-year-old cow, and a she-goat of 3 years old, and a ram of 3 years old, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he took unto him all of these and divided them in the midst. Now, that's a word that if you lived back in that time, you would understand what's taking place here. God is going to make a covenant, not only with his word, but with a pact that is physical, and it brings blood into the game here. This is going to make this covenant a blood covenant. And this was something that in the ancient biblical times, when two men entered into a covenant, they would take an animal and they would cut it in half. And as they would lay it open, one half on one side on the other, blood filled in the middle, and the two men would walk together through the blood trail of this animal that they've split in half. And this was a sign that they are agreeing with the covenant. They are making covenant together. This is a contract, whether it's a business deal or whatever. The blood covenant part of this was to solidify that if I break this covenant, then the blood that's on us now will be upon my family and upon my posterity. It's a pretty serious deal when you made a covenant with someone else. And what God is doing is he's already given his word to Abram, and Abram is believing, but yet there's partly, give me a sign, help me out, help grow my faith, give me a word, give me something, Lord, and we can relate to this. Give me a word, give me something, Lord, that can give me confirmation that this is still on, that this covenant you've made with me is still on. And God says, I want you to take the heifer, the ram, and the she-goat, and I want you to divide them in half and lay them to the side. And it says he did not do that with he did not divide the birds. He just laid them. But there's blood everywhere, as you can imagine. And what Abraham is prepared to do is to walk arm in arm with God in whatever form God chose to show himself or reveal himself. We don't know that. The Bible doesn't tell us what physical shape God was going to be prepared to show himself and walk down the middle of the divided covenant with Abram. So as we sit here, some time passes. God doesn't come right down. Abraham has cut the animals. He's got them laid out. It tells us as we read in here that he even has to shoo the vultures away. Time is passing. You know, God is delaying in meeting with him. He's done what God asked him to do. He's provided the covenant, the blood sacrifice, the blood covenant's laying on the ground. I'm ready, God, to walk down the middle with you. And God delays so much so that he has to stay up and shoo the vultures away. But yet, from verses 11 to 17, it says that God gave him a dream. God allowed Abram, while the blood covenant's on the ground, he put him to sleep to where he could speak to him in a dream. And I want to read what he did. And when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram. And lo, a horror of great darkness fell upon him. And he said unto Abram, talking about God, while he was in his sleep, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, shall serve them, and they shall afflict them, your people, for 400 years. He's given a prophecy to Abram in a deep sleep of what the children of Israel will go through, primarily through the land of Egypt. He's telling Abraham this. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterwards shall they come out with that with great substance. Talking about your people, I'm going to lead them out of that. And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace, and thou shalt be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. Now, what is God doing? God is not only delaying in walking with Abram down the middle of the blood covenant, but as additional confirmation, he is telling Abram what will become of his seed, of his posterity, of this great nation that God is going to make out of the seed of Abram. And Abram is seeing this. He doesn't give him very enjoyable news, but it is for us to know that God had this in preparation from day one. When God prophesies to Abram what will become of his people, Abram is learning this. He's troubled by it because he wants nice things for his people. But not only is he learning that this is going to happen, that God has already got a plan of action for my seed, here I am with no child of my own, but for those of us living thousands of years later, we can look back and say that God knew what the children of Israel was going to do from day one. This has all been part of his plan. So, as we pick up back into the scripture text in verse 17, it says, and it came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp passed between those pieces. Something different is happening. Abram's waiting to walk down the middle of the covenant trail, the blood covenant with God, but God comes down in a form that is overwhelming. A smoking, fiery blaze that comes down through the middle of the blood covenant trail. Abram's not included in this, meaning that you don't have a part of this covenant. Your works does not matter in this covenant. This covenant is all me. I, the Lord, am going to make this covenant, and all the works will come from me, not you. All you have to do is believe. So this is different than the most blood covenants where both parties had works involved to make it work. God is saying it's just me. Once again, laying for all of us to realize from the old covenant that he's making with Abraham to the new covenant with Jesus, it's all about him. So Abram doesn't walk through it, but he sees all of this taking place. Now, if we go into the New Testament, this is the covenant that God had made with Abraham, and the whole Old Testament lives under that old covenant. Now, Jesus refers to it in a separate way when on the last night of his life, before he's going to lay his life down to be crucified, he meets with his disciples in the upper room, and he does something that he hasn't done. He does what we call the Last Supper, where he has a time of communion with them. And during this time, he's speaking to them, and he gave them the meat and told them that this is my body that'll be broken. But then he gets to verse 27 of Matthew 26, where he says, and he took the cup, he gave thanks, and gave it to his disciples, gave it to them, saying, drink ye all of it, for this is my blood of the New Testament. Testament meaning a covenant. This is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it anew with you in my Father's kingdom. Now, Jesus established the new covenant, still over blood. The blood covenant is still there, but now this new covenant is his blood. It's not the blood of a goat and a ram and a cow. This is the one and only Son of God's blood that has provided the new covenant. And before he would lay that blood out, he's telling his disciples, drink of this wine symbolically, because a new covenant's about to take place. And all I ask for you to do is to believe in it, and to obey it, to be loyal to it. All the work's going to be done by me, is what Jesus is saying, and what we know that took place. So that's symbolic of the transformation from the old covenant made, where God and Abram are sitting here with this old blood covenant, and now Jesus is making the new covenant that we're under. So we know that at that point, God passes through the blood covenant. And in verse 18, and it says, he looked back to Abram, and the same day the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land. He's already living in it. He's been there for years. From the river of Egypt, which we assume is the Nile, unto the great river, the river Euphrates. This is a landmass that no one, the children of Israel, will never fully conquer until Solomon. Until David's conquering and Solomon's peace treaties and all that, from Egypt to the river Euphrates, Solomon will finally fulfill what God is saying is the culmination of the land of your seed. But God is foreseeing this and telling Abraham that this is what's going to take place. So we skip a couple of chapters into chapter 17. Years have passed. Here again, we're talking that, you know, as God reveals himself to Abram, and gives him a covenant, or gives him more confirmation, more time passes. Abraham's faith is still building. Abraham's relationship with God is still building. Still not having a child yet. So now, in chapter 17, where he started out at 75, he's now 99 years old. Still no son. And God says to him, I will make my covenant between me and thee. Here again, same type of words, confirmation that he's given him. I will make my covenant between me and thee, and will multiply thee exceedingly. This is my covenant which ye shall keep between me and you and thy seed after thee. Every man child among you shall be circumcised. This is a new thing for the covenant. During these 20-some years, during almost 25 years of following God, after God told him to leave his family and go into the land of Canaan and revealed himself, the covenant that he's making, he's continuing to give him words. He told him he was going to be a blessing. Then he made the physical blood covenant with Abram. Now he's going to ask Abram to do something. Now's the time that I'm going to give you a son. Ishmael has already been born. We've already come through the years where Abram has listened to Sarah, who they tried to make it happen through her handmaiden Hagar. And, you know, Ishmael is about 13 years old now. And, you know, a time has passed, and now God's coming on Abram again, still under the covenant that his seed, his individual seed, will be made a great nation. And it's not going to come from his servant. It's not going to come from Hagar, the handmaiden of Sarah. It's going to come from his own loins. And this is going to be, God's preparing him, because I want you to prepare a sign. There's going to be a sign that not only are you going to do, but it's also every male child after you is going to do this. You're going to be circumcised, because that's going to be a sign to everyone that you are my people and that we're under covenant. Now, Circumcision, from what I've read, was not a foreign thing back then. It wasn't widely done, but some ancient people did perform it. But God wanted this to be, as unusual as it may sound, that God picked this type of exercise to be the covenant between him and Abram. When we analyze it, it's really not that strange, because the whole covenant that he's making with Abraham is that your seed is going to multiply exceedingly. Your seed at 99 years old, as I'm talking to you now, is going to multiply exceedingly, and your nation will be blessed, and all the people of the earth that look to you and that bless you will be blessed. And he's sitting here, and I got no offspring of my own. But God's going to provide the offspring, and as a sign of the continual covenant, every male child will be circumcised as a sign that the reproduction of the Jewish race will go forth. Every time from this day forward, as Abraham circumcises himself and his servants, and then Isaac will come along and he'll circumcise him on the eighth day, from that day forward, every Jewish father, when he has a male child, after 8 days, and he goes and he circumcises his male child, the eight-day-old child doesn't know what's going on, the symbolism of it, but the father does. The father is circumcising his child symbolically in obedience to the covenant and in remembrance that I circumcise my son as a testimony of God's promises to us, to our father Abraham, therefore to us. We are the children of Abraham. We are the fulfillment of the promise, and we will continue to circumcise because we are showing honor to God's covenant. We are showing honor in our belief that God will make us a great nation. So every child went through this for the benefit of the father and the mother who knows what's happening. This is a testimony for our belief in God's prosperity upon our posterity. And that is something that God, throughout these 25 years, has continued to ask Abram to grow in his faith. You know, when we look at Abraham, he's not only been asked, you're talking about his faith, not only been asked to leave his comfort zone of his family, protection of his family, to go out on his own where land he's never been, didn't know anything about. And he conquered that, the fears that may happen, may go with that. He left. He's also tested Abraham or Abram with the knowledge that, hey, I'm going to make your seed a great nation, and you're going to be the father of many nations. Not only does he test his faith in believing that, and here Abram is like a human being. He tries to make it happen at times, but then in the end, he accepts it and he has that faith. But then as verse 20 or chapter 21 comes around, it says, Sarah conceives and bear Abraham a son in his old age. He's 100 years old now, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. So now, after 25 years of following God and believing in the covenant, making covenant, having faith in God, God has provided the seed. And after the eighth day, you know, he circumcised him and he names him Isaac, which means laughter, which was symbolic, as God wanted him to be named Laughter, not only because of the joy it brings him, but it was symbolic of Sarah, who, when she was told she would give birth at an old age, she laughed at God, and God has chastised her a little for that. And Isaac's name is Laughter, as you know, this is the fulfillment of my promise. But everything that Abraham has lived throughout his years has been following God the best he can, with the faith that this is going to happen, even though it breaks all rules of biology and everything else. The thing that I'm fascinated with Abraham over is not only his true faith in God's promises, but holding on to the faith over the course of many, many years. That's the part that we learn from and we try to gain in our own maturing process as Christians, and realizing that in our own walk with God, he's made promises to us throughout his word, and we receive those promises. We accept what his word tells us, But we may struggle with a certain thing for years, wondering, where is God? Why has God not done this for me? His word says this, and I'm expecting it right now. I need it right now. Certainly, Abraham went through those same emotions. I'm getting older. Every year that passes by, I haven't seen the promise of God. I'm still believing in God. I'm still walking with God. I'm still following the covenant because all I was required to do was to obey, to believe and obey. I'm doing my share, but nothing is happening. And yet, his faith continued. And God provided when he was 100 years old, impossible for him and his wife to actually, miraculous, that they could have a child. And they do, and they call his name Isaac. So now, Abraham has received the promise of God after 25 years. Now he can sit back and watch Isaac marry and have children. He can be a grandfather. He can see the start of his posterity as it's going to grow. He looks at Isaac every day and says, this kid has no idea. He's going to be the father of many nations. He's loving this. The young lad grows up with Abram and Abraham. Now that God has changed his name to father of many nations, Abraham, he's loving Isaac, and he can't wait to enjoy all the wonderful things that a father and son will enjoy, especially Abraham knowing what the future of Isaac is all about, and that's to have multiple children, multiple sons, and out of his seed will flourish. That would be the perfect ending of this thing, except for God wanted to test Abraham's faith. We don't fully know why. Was it for our benefit that we could see the faith of Abraham? Was it for our benefit that we could see the symbology? Did God need Abraham to do something to show forth the thousands and millions of people that would be born afterwards that God had intentions of sending his own son to be that blood covenant for us? We know what's about to happen. Abraham does not. It's in chapter 22, and it says, "It came to pass after these things that God did test Abraham. And said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here I am. And God said, Take now thy son." In this verse 2, there's very pointed topics here or statements that God is making. And this, it's almost as if God is saying, I know you don't believe what I'm saying, but I'm to add to the truth of what I'm about to say, I'm adding layers of adjectives and descriptions to what I'm saying. I'll point this out. It says, "And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son." I know what I'm saying. Take now your son. God knows he's going to ask him to sacrifice him, but he knows Abraham's going to have questions in his mind, so he answers the questions before. "Take now thy son, thine only son, Isaac, whom you love." He hadn't forgotten that he loves Isaac. He hadn't forgotten that he made the promise that this is your son, your only son, that I made a promise with. "Take your son, your only son, whom you love, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him, sacrifice him, there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of." Incredible. Everything that he had been promised had been fulfilled after 25 years, but it's been fulfilled, and now God's going to take it. Take the promise. What does this mean? This doesn't make sense to Abraham, nor would it make sense to any of us. God's plans are so far beyond Abraham's plans, because Abraham's plan is just to raise Isaac to be a father himself, and now God is testing Abraham, saying that I want you to take your only son and offer him to me, sacrifice him to me. Verses 3 through 9, which are not in your scripture text, tells us that Abraham did the very thing. He packs him up one morning, takes a couple servants, he puts, he loads up the wood, and they go to Mount Moriah. And he takes the lad up there and tells the servants, "Y'all stay here. Me and the lad are going to go, and we'll be back. We'll be back," he says. Abraham, we're taught in the New Testament, and his faithfulness to God after 20-some years of following the Lord and knowing that God is ever faithful. He didn't understand why God wanted him to sacrifice his son, to kill his son. It's one thing to say, I want you to dedicate him to my service. You know, you're not going to raise him, I'm going to raise him. You know, Abraham could have accepted that. But no, I want you to kill him. I want you to kill him as an offering to me. And Abraham is willing to do it, but his faith has grown over the long span of time that he has walked with the Lord to fully believe that God's going to raise him from the dead right there. I'll offer him as a burnt offering, but yet God will bring him back to life because he tells the servants, we're coming back. We'll be back. The New Testament tells us that that's what he believed, that he was going to raise him from the dead. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son, the promise of God. And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him, for now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. He stops Abraham from doing what Abraham had committed to do, simply following God's direction, the covenant. He did everything that God told him to do. A couple of times he questioned it. Certainly in his mind and in his heart, he questioned, how in the world could I follow what God is telling me to do? But he was willing to do it. That's the covenant part. God said, I'll do all the work. I'll provide all the blessings. I'll provide all the promises. Your role is to obey. Your role is to follow me. What I tell you to do, do. My ways are more than your ways or higher than your ways, and you have to trust me. Don't lean on your own understanding. Trust me, and I will make it all well. It's a powerful lesson, Abraham, as we close this lesson down. Powerful in the fact that without question, he followed God. He always did what God asked him, and yet he still had testing to go through, trials that he couldn't fully understand, but he stayed in line with, he didn't give up on God. He didn't run from God. He didn't say, no, this is my son you've given me. We're out of here. He was willing to sacrifice him, not fully understanding, but believing that God would raise him from the dead again and go through it. We learn a lot from Abraham in the fact that it was counted upon him, his faith as righteousness, and that's all we're asked to do is have faith ourselves. And all the promises that God has given us here, we have to receive these promises. And that's some of the most difficult times that we go through is when the pain and the evidence and the facts that we face are anti what the scriptures tell us. But to have the faith that they are still there for us to receive, to have that faith, we learn from Abraham to trust in God and he will make it right. Whatever may befall us, when we don't understand, and even when the end results seem to go against what God has provided for us, in the end we will know that there was a reason for everything that happened to us that God allowed to happen in our lives. Next week we're going to follow up with this as we continue the patriarchs. We're going to follow Isaac as he does become a father to Jacob and Esau. And we'll talk about God's plan for humanity at that point.